earlier this year, you guys made the decision of removing, controversial decision of removing survival points from the PvP games. I have two questions based on this.
I'm going to confirm it right now. Hades Havoc will not be returning to main events because we have essentially served Minecraft event games essentially need to be non-perishable in a way. Like, sometimes they can get stale, but, like, you want to be serving up non-perishable food, like, non-perishable games.
We just told them to go out into the wilderness and bring us back some players, you know? And they did, and they did really well.
Terribly. I sang it terribly. You know, like the tyrant in hell who's a hit with all the ladies.
Hades.
Alright lads, welcome back to Inside MC, the podcast where I sit down with an amazing guest, or in this case, guests every single week. And this week, I am joined with some of the team from Pandora's Box, more specifically, Colorbolt, Danny Pistachio, and Resendor. Welcome in, hope you're all doing well.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
I am recovering from being unwell, so the intro is very mid, not really up to my normal standard. But we're making history today because this is the first ever three-person podcast, or like three-guest-person podcast.
Have you ever done a two-person podcast?
Yes, I have done it with both Savage Lord and Phase Ray and Space Brownies and Masky Z. And I believe there's another one. But
damn, we're making history here.
Yeah, we're totally gonna be talking over each other like the entire podcast. It's gonna be great. We're gonna love it.
That's fine. And for anyone who can't differentiate voices, I'll let you all introduce yourself separately and then hopefully people can remember who's who, because I'm not putting like it's too much editing to specify who's talking who. So go for you guys. Firstly, Colorbolt. This is the rundown. As soon as I say your name, this is what I want you to do. Introduce yourself. So who are you? What do you do? And what do you do within Pandora's Box? And if you have a fun fact, either about yourself or in general. Colorbolt, you first.
Hello, my name is Colorbolt, also known as Isaac. I'm 22 and I'm the lead developer for Pandora's Box, who also worked on many things for Pandora's Box Dragon Pit.
There you go. Danny?
Hey guys, I'm Danny Picacho, or more easily known as Danny Pistachio. I'm one of the project leads for Pandora's Box, and I'm also the head artist and now 3D modeler as well.
Jeez, yeah. And Resendor.
Hi, I'm Kelton Stecky, also known as Resendor, and I do the music for Pandora's Box and also was the director for Dragon Pit.
There we go. And I hope you're all doing good today as well.
Right.
Doing great.
We are.
Yeah.
See, I should have been more prepared for this because I have like, I'm going to ask you guys questions, but the issue is I don't really have like specific to the person questions, because normally when I bring people on, it's like creator, right? But this time it's like, I'm talking to you about the tournament. So I guess we're just going to have a conversation and whoever is more fit for answering it steps up to the plate.
we can figure that out pretty easily.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, developer insight, you know, we got you.
I guess the first thing then is, what is the origin of, well, we'll go back to the very very start. So before Pandora's Box came Frost Wars, right?
That was an event that we ran for 5 months between August and December 2021 by an organizer we don't speak of. It was made off of a desire to host an event that was like similar to MCC. So it was hosted in someone else's vision and it had a lot of games in it. Like you said, there's so like SG, there was Disco Fever, Speedrun. There were a lot of similarities to Pandora's Box actually, but it was all like games that were made to be like fun and also competitive a little bit as well. It's still kind of a thing we keep up to this day. And also with the specialty of running only on Sundays.
I've casted a Frost Wars. It was the Lantastic event.
Yeah, that was a rerun of the final Frost War event, Frost War 7, which originally was the Christmas event for 2021, the final Frost War.
And then,
although we have rerun it many times.
That came to an end and Pandora's Box got started, right?
The Phoenix from the Ashes, yeah.
Yeah, so we had actually a vote within the player server. We had a few different names being tossed around and Pandora's Box actually won the vote. I believe it was actually pretty close though. I don't remember the exact numbers, but Pandora's Box won. I think it was like a
sweep.
It's like a 55 or 60% like margin or something like that. So we ended up renaming the event Pandora's Box.
Like what was the origin of changing the whole tournament? Because obviously like Pandora's Box is an entirely separate one, right? Or was it just originally a name change?
It was mostly a name change. Many of the things were carried over, like, you know, games like speedruns, travel games. I don't think any maps were actually carried over, except from like Disco Fever, I think, and maybe one other I can't remember, but everything else was basically made brand new, but it was still like the same games. But of course, everything was rebranded, so mostly to distance itself from the past, and because we had like the new MasterGarf organizer. So I think the new era deserved a new name.
lot of new developers too.
Yeah, and I think we announced it during IdiotCon, right?
Back That's in correct.
2021. Yeah,
IdiotCon.
Oh, it's an online convention we held.
You need to come to next IdiotCon happening. At a date.
2027.
Is IdiotCon like specifically Minecraft, or is it just like a whole convention?
Yeah, it's just a base, but just about like our own servers and online games.
Oh, so it's
that we announced. So we had like trailers and stuff for it, as well as showing off stuff in game. Like we announced that Gauntlet from Frost War at the time was added to the main server. It can now be played.
Yeah, and then I remember we changed our name from Idiot Games before to Growing Studios now, and I think we did that about a year ago. So I guess we'd be what, GrunkCon now? Is that what we're doing? GrunkCon? Yeah.
I'm gonna be so honest. I always, for some bizarre reason, forget that Grunk Studios is a thing. Not in a way of like they're like as like an arrogant sense. It's more so like I remember they existed for this podcast, but until you mentioned IdiotCon, I was like, I completely forgot Grunk Studios is like what owns or in quote unquote like owns Pandora's Box. Because when I went into asking what was the origin of Frost Wars, I should have actually been asking what was the origin of Grunk Studios.
Well, we could talk about that too.
Yeah, long story short, a goat in French class. Okay, that's no context. That's the origin.
Was that is that the high school story that you said you're doing three words? Was that a separate one?
Well, that's kind of it. It's not how we met, but it is our namesake.
Yeah, I always, whenever I tell people about our, like, origin story, or I guess, like, the developer origin, it almost sounds, like, fake. You know, you hear those stories about people who are like, these two guys, they met in high school, and in their parents' garage, they built a multi-billion dollar company, right? And you're like, okay, well, that's obviously fake. They probably just, like, knew each other from high school and had an idea. But, like, for those who don't know, me, Isaac, and Kelton all actually, like, went to the same high school. We were all high school friends, and it just so happens that we all just had like a vision and filled like we each filled a part of what makes development. Isaac with microcoding, me with doing art and direction, and then Kelton music, and also all three of us at the same time were all just really passionate about game design. So you put that all together, it just seems fake. Like, yeah, right, three guys who met each other in high school just so happened to make the Pandora's Box team. But no, they really did.
Isn't that crazy though, that like all three of you were so interested in Minecraft and you went to the same school? For instance, like my schoolmates, quote unquote schoolmates, like I'm 21 years of age now, I don't talk to anyone from my secondary school. And when I say I don't talk to them, I mean there's like two people who we check up on each other like every 6 months. But
yeah.
For the most part, I don't talk to any of them. And we had like a phase where we played Minecraft, but little did they know I actually really enjoyed Minecraft, whereas they all just played it during COVID for like 4 or 5 weeks and then gave up on the server. Mm-hmm. So it's very rare that you find three people who you become close with and it's like you all have the same interest of Minecraft specifically, if that makes sense. And
then yeah, we got kind of lucky.
I would say that like it's just crazy, you know, to think back, because I think Isaac and I met even before high school. I think we met in like grade 7, and you know, just seeing how just the events that kind of led up to what created you know, Idiot Games in the first place was, I think, just kind of a happen chance. I think, you know, some weird things like the, you know, the pandemic of course had some effect, but also just like random things. Like I just, Danny was talking to me in like some class and he's like, hey, you know, Isaac's a server and you should join, because I, you know, I was talking to him how much I like building in Terraria or something like that. And so I just hopped on the server, and I remember I made like Danny get a bunch of like wood for me or something. Oh, do you remember that?
That's all I was to him, by the way. Like that's all I was to him. Wood getter.
Yeah, he's my wood collector, and then I built the houses, and
they were nice houses, so I did it happily.
So you've always been a good team, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
What is, I guess, for the purpose for someone who has absolutely zero clue what we're talking about and is listening to this podcast just because they love Inside MC, what is Grunk Studios?
Well, there's a couple different definitions of Grunk Studios, but there's really just two ones that are really important, although they are kind of the same thing now. Grunk Studios is mostly known for being a Minecraft, like a Discord server, which hosts games like Counterpush, which we put a lot of work into, well, maybe not during Dragon Pit, but before and after, as well as like our main development hub area. Like that's where testing is held, that's where dev talk happens most of the time. It's like our main development area, and also a Minecraft server that's connected to. We also have the old minigame server, which kind of still runs, but we don't really update it anymore, the archive server. But Grunk Studios is also kind of just us three as well, in a way, as it's like refers to like both the company, or if you want to call it a company, or referring it to just us three, like as like coders, like as a team of like people who make games as well. So it's kind of both the Discord server and also like just other three of us working together on games.
I'd like to say it's a pretty like company vibe. It reminds me a lot of Coppola Media, which is, as you all know, is a company as well. Gives me very much those vibes.
Yeah, you know, I think like with Gorenk Studios, like it's much more, I would say, not necessarily like a company, but much more of like a partnership, because I think better, it was just kind of like a thing that we created because we wanted like a name to be associated with all the stuff that we did, because we had, you know, this a bunch of umbrella like games and things like that we'd work on, like all these projects from like the early days with like Sneak and Seek. Oh, we could get down a whole rabbit hole about Sneak and Seek, but probably wouldn't have time for that. Counter Push, and then, you know, PB and all of these projects. We kind of wanted to kind of get a name for the group. And actually, I think it originally came from our old like just friend group server during the pandemic that we'd play like Among Us and stuff on, called Groink. And when we were trying to come up with a rebrand, we were just like, oh yeah, you know, Groink is kind of like a funny name. And yeah. You know, kind of represented our friend group in a way, and so we use that as our kind of our name and branding for the partnership.
I know this is about Pandora's Box, but I do want to say that Counter Push Contenders is really good. Like, obviously, from casting out Time with Joe Carter, I very much appreciate it. Like, that is a very, very good, I guess, unquote event. How comes you guys don't, like, I mean, maybe you do, and maybe I'm just missing it, but how comes you guys don't push that as much as you do Pandora's Box? Is it like you enjoy CPC, but Pandora's Box is like your child, or if you get
well,
what I mean?
Well, the other way CPC around, and Pandora's Box were actually born pretty close together, I can't lie. Like, they were both born, like, within 2 months of each other. I think first CPC was like January, whereas the first Pandora's Box event was in March of the same year. CPC is more that it's a bit harder to watch in like an event stance. We recognize that it's probably not the best viewer experience, rather than it, like, playing it is probably a lot of fun. We've never been able to play ourselves besides Kelton a couple times, but again, we've never been able to play, but we can imagine what it must be like. But from a viewer standpoint, it is a little bit harder to watch if you're not in the grand finals, mostly because of the tournament structure, because the games are very long. I'm sure as we've all experienced is like, you win a game and you have to, like, if you win your game really quickly, you're then waiting for a while other games finish. Like, if you're in a best of three and you win your two maps immediately, and now you have to, like, watch, or if you're watching a streamer, you have to watch them idle in a lobby for, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
We recognize it's not the best viewer experience unless you're in, like, the grand finals on Sunday, which only, like, 2 out of the 8 teams make it to, so.
And you know, I think, you know, just to add on to that, I think because the game and its viewer experience is so kind of mixed, because I think if you understand Counter Push, it makes the game a lot more interesting and enjoyable. But if you like got a bunch of streamers or whatever, and you really tried to plug Counter Push Tenders as like this big event with a bunch of big creators, I think most of the viewers just wouldn't understand what's going on. You know, it'd be like expecting somebody to know what was going on at Worlds for League of Legends who had never played League of Legends. You know, it'd just be really hard to like get people invested, because they'd be like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, I just see particles flying all over the place. You know, people would didn't really get the crazy plays or what we were saying. You know, they'd just be like, this is cool, but I don't know what's happening, you know?
Sorry, extremely off topic, but I accidentally showed up at League of Legends Worlds the other day. I don't know how I did it. I just went to get food with my partner, and then we saw like a Red Bull stand, so I went over to get a free Red Bull, and then CPK was just there streaming, so showed up on stream.
Fire.
So when you bring it up, it's funny. No, I think CPC as well, like, I mean, I understand why you don't fully push it, because of the factors you mentioned there, which make 100% sense, even from casting it. Like, we did, me and Joe kind of did a decent amount of research, but even then, like, kind of ended up subbing in on a team while we were casting.
It happens a lot. A lot of there's always a lot of sub like that in the event, like much more than any other event, mostly because it is a multi-day format as well. The chances of everyone being there for both days, which, to be fair, only like a third, or I guess like a third of the teams make it to the last day, but still.
So yeah.
You're basically dealing with like 11 full rosters showing up on the day of the collectively between Saturday and Sunday. So
I just think just that is like a fully fledged tournament event. Like, maybe just 1 month you made it like a proper professional pro, like a Rainbow Six Siege esports. Like, I know they're live right now, they do it, or like thing. I obviously understand why you don't do it, but I'd love to see it one day if it was ever possible.
Yeah, the one big barrier, and this is probably the last thing I'll say about Counter Push Contenders, but the one big barrier of that is mostly other events taking up the schedule.
Yeah.
If we theoretically had if other events all just ceased to like schedule events, we would totally do it. But getting like people, especially creators who'd probably want to play in other events like Block Wars, you know, Mayhem or whatever, getting them to play in Counter Pretenders and having to like basically bar them out of other events would just be like probably a no deal. It just would not be a good deal for them, really, unless we put like a prize pool in, but that has like many other issues that I won't get into today. So it's more just availability. Like I admit I've sometimes came up with like fantasy schedules where I'll like write up like a schedule of like how I would schedule it over the course of a month or two, and of course it never happens because other events will always like strike right through it. So that's kind of mostly the reason why it's kind of hard to do that, but that's mostly regarding Counterpitch Contenders versus like Pandora's Box, where it's just a 3-hour slot on a Sunday.
So I didn't mean to go so like fully into it. It's just because it links into Growing Studios and eventually into Pandora's Box, it's all this kind of same idea and run by the same people. That's why I wanted to bring it up. To me personally, it feels like it links into stuff, and because a lot of people probably don't know what Counterpitch is in the sense of your tournament, that's why I kind of wanted to shed a bit of light on it on this podcast.
Yeah, no, that was perfect. That was really good, I think.
So Pandora's Box, I mean, the main thing that people are going to want to listen to today is about Dragon's Pit, but I still have a few general questions about Pandora's Box before we get into that. That's why timestamps exist, because if people don't care about this part, they can just skip over it. So Pandora's Box, firstly, I know you all mentioned like your roles at the start of what you do within the PB team. It's like a slightly weirder question. I don't know if you'll be able to answer it, but I want to ask it anyways. What are each of yours biggest impacts over the years during Pandora's Box? If you have one, like what is one moment during Pandora's Box where like it stuck with someone or it stuck with you and you're like, yeah, that was because of me, specifically me. Is there any moments like that from any of you?
I mean, for me, it would be hard to pin down a specific moment because I do mostly all the dev work, and I mean, a lot of it is basically, it's not the same. Obviously, it's different. Like, making a new game is different. And, you know, to be honest, like, Hyperdrive and Speedrun are basically the same code, to be completely honest. As well as, like, some other, like, racing games are all pretty much the same code. So, just coding everything, just making it all work, it's kind of hard to pin down a specific impact point. So, I think it's kind of just more consistently being always there to code things for the whole event.
That's a good answer, though, to be fair. That's what I said. I wasn't sure if any of you'd be able to answer the question specifically. It was just like,
yeah, no, just I think it's a really interesting question. It's a really good question. I think it's hard for me to answer, but I think if I was to like, you know, kind of pinpoint something, I think definitely it would probably be when I released the first album of the PB soundtrack. And I, you know, kind of just did that as like, of course, I've liked music for a long time, but it was my first time actually doing anything that was like a completed work and wasn't just kind of, you know, just drafts of ideas and things like that. And just the response and the positive response to the album and what people were saying and, you know, listening to and loving the soundtrack was just a really cool feeling, you know, to experience.
Have you ever thought about for April Fool's singing over the soundtracks?
Oh, God. I don't know if anybody would want to hear my singing.
That's the whole point of an April Fool's event.
On April Fool's. Yeah.
Like, that'd be, yeah,
you know, be a good idea.
I'll do the Temple Burnout remix sing over my dub. Yeah, that's what I'll do.
April 1st falls on a Tuesday, so you could have your event on Sunday the 30th of March. Whatever, done
true.
That. Yeah, I have done that. Okay, yeah, no, that is right. Yeah,
just for people's, you know, I don't want to break people's ears before the event. You know, that would.
Unironically, people would probably actually love that. Like, they'd probably genuinely love if all the, like, especially the streamers, if you didn't mention anything about it anywhere, but in this podcast, and if it actually happened, and just, like, you go into, and I can't think of a name off the top of my head, I'm blanking on the PB name, sorry. I know them, I just, right now, in this instance, I'm blanking. But if, like, you go into one of the games and you just hear singing over the soundtrack instead while people are trying to communicate, and it just slowly gets louder and louder and louder and louder.
Oh, God.
Oh, nah.
I think that'd be funny, personally, but, you know, the idea is there.
Yeah, I think ultimately, though, for that question, though, it is kind of hard for us to pinpoint something just because we've all been so active in development. Like, if I want to answer myself, for example, like, anyone who's, like, read my bio, I've, like, project lead, Genesis organizer, testing manager, texture artist, and, like, even more, like, I think I've dabbled in almost, if not every aspect of PB at some point. I don't think I've never written a music track myself or like done a full game coding, but like I've helped with helping Isaac watching the coding or like telling Kelton like what I wanted for one of the songs. But I guess the one the one project that I did have really a big lead on and something that is kind of my child in Pandora's box is Trials of Fire. That was the first game that I like took a full lead on. I've had leads on other projects like SG, Sky High, other stuff, but Trials of Fire was the first game that I kind of from scratch led its full development. So especially seeing that game, what was it? I think it was PB12, yeah, that it came out, and then seeing the reception of it, people really liked the team game aspect, was like really good for me.
What are each of yours favorite games? Like, if there's one game that you could play. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that felt like an obvious answer.
Yeah, I was like, frame one, bro. For sure, for me, it's Hades Havoc, the new game I released during Dragon Pit. For sure.
That's cheating.
Let's rule out Dragon's Pit.
I know it's cheating, okay, but it's my favorite. I have to add it out to sleep.
And if I, ruled out Dragon's Pit, then just from regular Pandora's Box, if you had to choose.
See, I think my favorite game ever in Pandora's Box, and I'm definitely biased on this, was Capture Point, when it had the zones, like all those little mini zones all around the map. That game was so fun.
It was so fun.
But probably from a viewer standpoint, I think one of my favorite games to watch for sure is Hyperdrive. I think really? Just watching people fly around, and especially when people fail and you get their funny reactions, like I think that is just hilarious to me on rewatches, just to see how people fail, I guess, is kind of the more part I enjoy about that. Not to say I hate watch or anything, but
I was expecting you to say Challenge Chase, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Challenge Chase is so fun to play. Like, I think I those round robin games. I do too. Oh my god, playing Challenge Chase is like so fun. But I think from a viewer standpoint, round robin games. I don't know. Yeah. I just think it's kind of like they're the most fun to play, but also kind of the least fun to watch to a degree.
Yeah, true.
Be honest, I gotta go with a fan favorite, because it was an idea that I came up with entirely in my head by basically merging two ideas together. I gotta go with the good old Temple Lockout from 2023.
That's a good one.
Mining all those zones and also a battle royale in the same game, I think was actually ended up a lot better than I even thought it would originally. Especially even the Dragon Pit implementation too as well was really good with like the new Neonopolis map.
Uh-huh.
I just think that like the way you mine the zones and also have to focus on the battle, making it so you have to like not only rat, well, or fight if you want to fight or rat, but also have to like pay attention to the zones around you, zones and rooms around you, in the words of DJ Gigalord. You got to pay attention to everything. I think just works out really well from gameplay and is also really fun to play and also fun to watch from a viewer perspective, and also extremely fun to spectate. It actually, I think SG is a little bit better, mostly just because you can see everything a bit more easily. But from a spectating standpoint, Temple Lockout is a very, very solid second place spectating.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Which is basically our perspective during the event. So I do have to be a bit biased towards the spectator perspective. not of the player spectating, but of like the actual in-game spectating. Yeah, and in-stream spectating.
I have a very controversial question. And I mentioned about survival games. And earlier this year, you guys made the decision of removing, you made the controversial decision of removing survival points from the PvP games. I have two questions based on this. First one, why'd you do it?
I could actually go into this pretty well if you wanted.
Yes.
Personally, I think it was one of the best decisions we've ever made for PvP games. I've had very, very long arguments with several people about logistics and the mathematics behind each of the points of these PvP games. But ultimately, it just creates a more viewer-focused game. Like, the thing is, if survival games has survival points, I get it, it's in the game. But if there is survival points, people are going to play to that advantage. It doesn't matter if you have billion people watching you. The point is, people want to win, and people are going to play every advantage that they have. So players are naturally going rat for survival points. Not only does this hinder map design, because then it means we have to specifically make every area not, with Gulag, it's so bad because you can just go on top of a tree and sit there for 8 years. It's horrible. So it hinders map design, but that's kind of just more of a small aspect. It's really just, we really, really dislike the fact that you can be rewarded for something you did not contribute to. We think that it didn't really make sense that a fight happening across the map is rewarding a team that did nothing, who's, you know, ratting somewhere else. And then when it comes down to more of the logistics and the mathematics behind the points, you have to remember that it's kind of psychological. A lot of the reason that people like survival points, aside from having something extra to do besides fighting, is that they can, their points, the points of the lower placing players will look better. Like a low placing player will have more points, but inversely, a top placing player is also being rewarded more. That's the problem. Top players, at the end of the day, they're going to survive till the end of SG, right? So what happens is, if you're giving everyone, and I mean everyone who's alive, points for someone else dying, whether or not they contributed or not, then all you're really doing is just giving more points to the top ranks anyways. Since you're giving basically everyone points, it looks better for the lower placing player to have 50 points instead of 4 points, but you're also giving the top placing player those points as well. So it's not really fair. People think it's fair because they're getting points for survival, but it's not actually fair in practice because those points that they're getting being awarded to everyone else.
Yeah, if you couldn't tell, Danny wrote his master's thesis on damage.
I really did. I have had so many arguments about this, and every time, and I get it though, like there is really good arguments against. I'm not gonna say that it is flawless game design and we have cracked the master code behind
we cracked
the master code behind the survival game point distribution. Like, no, we didn't. There were so many flaws. Of course, if you're a low placing player, you're gonna struggle to get points if you can't hit people, right? But ultimately though, I think there is just more pros than there is cons. I think one of the biggest cons, I think, is people saying that you have to essentially throw yourself into a fight if you want to actually achieve anything, which I don't actually think is true, because by surviving longer, you have more opportunities to kill more people and get more damage. And no matter what you do, this is completely unavoidable. Every SG is going to end in a mosh pit 100% of the time. Every SG will end in a mosh pit. And in a mosh pit, it doesn't matter if you're hell awesome or you have a trackpad. It doesn't matter.
If you're
in a mosh pit, sorry those trackpad gamers. It doesn't matter what your skill level is. If you're in a mosh pit, you're getting free damage. It is impossible not hit people in a mosh pit. You are going to get free damage. So it is honestly, if you are a low placing player and you make it till the end of the game, probably getting more points through damage in the mosh pit than you would have gotten through those survival points that you got from doing nothing.
We've done the math on it before. The damage pool, I think, for SG is, I think it's still 3,400 or 200. It's something like that. That's split between all 32 players. Well, on average, if every player did the average, it would be like over 100 points per player if every player did the same amount. So, and considering many people die without doing a single hit of damage in some games, maybe not many people, but like, they'll be able to do like four or five hearts to the person who was attacking them, but then they'll just die and then they'll lose Gulag. Considering how much damage it actually takes to reach like triple digits in terms of damage points is not really that much higher than you think. Like, I believe I did the math that on average an iron sword hit is like 13 points or something like that already.
Jeez, I mean, also
like a full iron crit.
Remember also that we now have a system currently where if we have survival points in quotations. Essentially what happens in SG is you get survival points, but you don't actually get them. If at the end of the round, if at the end of the round your what you would have gotten in survival points is more than what you got in damage points, then your points are instead replaced by survival. It's called survival compensation, and I think it's actually a really genius system, because then at least you are rewarded if you were able to survive that long but just couldn't hit anyone.
Yeah, we have a couple countermeasures as well. So I believe in survival games it's 3 per player, in Sky High it's 2 per player, but it actually stops once you're in the final 8. So the most you can get is like whatever 24 players. So even if once you make the final 8, there's now no more points being given out and compensated. And again, by that point, most players, it's pretty rare to get it. Usually if you get it, it means you maybe survived 1 or 2 people and then did 0 damage the whole game. That's usually what it means. But these points are like, you'll get like maybe like 6 or 12 or 15 points at best. I don't believe I've ever seen someone get more than like 30 points out of it. It probably happened, I've never seen it though. Which 30 is pretty low for PV.
Can I throw out a weird idea that I've just thought of while listening to you guys talk?
Yeah, let's hear it.
How many people are how many players are there in Pandora's Box?
32.
So what if you gave survival points to the people who are in the bottom, let's say like 16, from 16 in the specific game?
Well, that could introduce a new thing where now it would be 17th would be the highest player to get it, where 17th could now just outplay 16th pretty easily, which would be controversial.
Well, no, but it wouldn't be loads of points. It'd be like the people who are in the bottom like thing, they just get one extra point per survival.
That way, then, one like, point.
Get, well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You satisfy the masses by going, oh, look, survival points are back. But in reality, you're just like
Shane Fire Breath Band can finally celebrate the return.
you're like satisfying the masses, but like by going, oh, you can get an extra 16 points if you're in the bottom 16. Like that'll make
a difference. At that point, you're kind of just jangling keys in front of the bottom fraction, saying, look, survival points. But yeah. Really, I mean, it's disproportionate, and it's not really like at that point, that would be purely psychological. It's kind of the same as we've made a joke before, where if you just gave every player 50 points, so that way the lower placing player doesn't look like they have 4 points, instead they have 54, but the top frag also gets plus 50, but they don't even like, they won't even look at that. Like, that was a joke we made, but like it's kind of just the same. Where it would be,
it's like, if you know, like the climate action payment we have in Canada here, it's basically just like that, where like everyone regardless of income in our province gets $225 every 3 months. I think it's like more if you have a family, but like every single person gets $225. It's kind of like that.
Whoa. Oh. Guys, we're getting deep here.
it was a necessary example, I think, in this case. It was irrelevant.
My second question was, are you happy like at the end with the change? Yep. But you've already answered that. So, but just for the listener going, what was the second question? That was my second question.
Yeah. We can go into reference for a long time, but yeah, I think we can probably move on from that.
We will get into Dragon Pit soon, I promise. But I just want to talk about general Pandora's Box before we move into that.
Good. No, totally.
So how many months ago was it now when you announced the split?
Was it August or July?
To the public. It was after PB 13. It was right after PB 13.
Wait, that's not even in the public.
Whenever that was.
So
anyone?
I don't have it in front of me here.
I swear, like Dragon Pit development is all a big blur. It just felt like we work in like a huge block of time for like 7 months. So everything in that 7 months, it could be 2 months, it could be 5 months, it all feels the same because it was just so heavy in the development of that project.
Well,
but yeah, we announced it before PB13 or something.
I'll find
June it. 23rd.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
It was on April 17th, I released a podcast with Master Garf. Do you guys know who Master Garf is?
I watched it. Oh, I've never heard of him.
Well, you never heard of him.
It's a bit ironic, you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched that podcast with no idea who he was.
And then we talked about Pandora's Box, and they kind of hinted, I believe, towards like, yeah, there's literally a timestamp called Our Take on Tournament Splits. So I've kind of got their take on it before it was actually announced with Pandora's Box, but I want to talk to you guys about it as well. What was the inspiration behind the split? Because it's very clear to a lot of people you went down the Block Wars route, quote unquote the Block Wars route, where they split between Block Wars and Block Wars Origins, which as a basis of how I see it, which isn't fully truthful, it's just how I say it towards people I'm close with, is creators and friends. That's the two different splits. Well, not saying that's 100%, I'm saying that's like as a rough quote unquote, right? But what was you going to say? I want to hear it, Danny.
I could give a little secret. There was a period very early into Pandora's Box where we had talked about a split, like really, really early on, before Block Wars actually did theirs. I don't know if they had planned one before us. You know, so it's kind of a which came first, the chicken or the egg, right? But it was a terrible idea. I'm so incredibly glad we didn't do that split. It just was not the time for it at all. And also we did get a lot of backlash from the players, understandably so. Like, it just didn't make sense at the time. So we never did that split, and then eventually Block Wars did their split, and we were like, oh man, like we're gonna get cooked for this. But after time, we saw how well received the Block Wars split was, and also how much positive it did for Block Wars, because in reality it is a net positive. One, they get to keep growing. Two, they still, you know, they still give their event as kind of a love letter to their original players. Like in Origins, they still have all these players who supported them since the beginning that still get to play. It's still the same event, and they even get to occasionally have some of their friends join in as newcomers. So like, ultimately it is a net positive. Like, these guys still get to play the event, and Block Wars still gets to grow with creators, you know, as an event. So seeing how well received and how well it worked for Block Wars, it's like, okay, well now we can actually consider it. We just have to make sure we do it at the right time and not at a stupid time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was also, I think, just the players were getting benched for so many seasons.
Exactly.
In a row. Yeah, that it got to a certain point where it's like, if you ever want to play again, like, the best thing we can do is actually split, because, you know, there were certain players that had been benched for like 3 seasons straight, and me being a bi-monthly event, you know, 6 months, that's half a year, right, that you can't be playing. It just kind of got to where it made just the most sense for everybody, where it was like from a growth standpoint, and then also just from like everybody just gets to play more, right? And that was nice, I think, for all the players, for sure.
No. We knew that it would likely have to happen eventually. The only thing I believe we really cared a lot about was making sure it happened before Dragon Pit.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to make sure that the Genesis players would get to experience it as well.
And now was the perfect, that like when you did it, was the perfect time to do it.
I believe so, yes.
I think so, yeah.
See, the thing is, I'm not like anti-split. I've just never really been for it. Like, there's nothing wrong with splits. Like, I have nothing against it. I've just never really liked the idea of like splitting rosters into two. It's completely understandable why, when you get to a point where PB is and where Block Wars is, where you have people who've been there from the start, do you want to still experience the event? Like, which is completely understandable. But with, like, for instance, with Mayhem, which I'm player manager for somewhat, it doesn't need to happen. So it's never really been a consideration. They have drafts, right, which is like unstreamed. Which is an unstreamed split, so technically it has happened, but like not in the sense of how you guys have done it kind of thing. Well, you've done it very well.
Yeah, I think it really mostly does also just come down to what Kelton said, where it wasn't really getting fair for the people who have supported us for so long, having to, like, obviously at the end of the day, if you want to grow as an event, you have to put the content creators in as a priority, right? But when you do that, you're benching the players who have been supporting you for so long, the ones who were there from the start. It's not really fair for them. So I think with a split, I think that's why it works so well for us, because now these players actually get a chance to play a lot more often. And I think another reason why it actually worked so well for Pandora's Box specifically, obviously it worked great for Hogwarts, but why it was also so good for Pandora's Box is because since we're a bi-monthly event, people have to wait a long time to watch Pandora's Box.
Sorry.
But this let us post it back to monthly, well, in quotation, since it's technically still, it's a rerun, but it is now people can actually watch Pandora's Box every month instead of having to wait 2 months for the next Pandora's Box.
Yeah, it just keeps the quality up and then still has like high volume, you know, just so people can, you know, play and watch. And yes, it's I think it's just kind of good all around for us, really.
Quite like it as well, because I think it was the last Mayhem, no, it was at the Mayhem Viewer event, it clashed with Block Wars because there was only 4 Saturdays in a month, and one of the Saturdays was for MCC Rising. I think another one of the Saturdays was for Twitch Rivals. But only left 2 more Saturdays, and they were both for Block Wars, so it clashed with Mayhem. I quite like how you guys do it bi-monthly, so it only takes up, quote-unquote, takes up one Sunday a month, and it kind of like...
I would take the Sunday pill.
Yeah. I mean, and they very quickly run back to Counterpush Contenders as well. That's also important that we make sure we have time for that when it eventually comes back. Eventually, yeah. So.
I took the inspiration for the Inside MC events to host them on Sundays, and I made sure purposely to do this next one to not clash with Pandora's Box. So it's actually the week after Ascension.
Let's go.
No, the week after Genesis. Sorry, apologies. I'm trying to remember the names. It's hard, okay? My brain remembers a lot of things.
You're good.
What about the name inspiration for them, Ascension and Genesis? What's the deal with that?
Oh, I could get into this one too. So obviously we didn't want to just do Origins for obvious reasons, but Isaac actually had the idea that we should have a name for both, because obviously we, as everyone knows, Block Wars as Block Wars and then Block Wars Origins, and Isaac thought it was just a better idea to have it have them each named with their own name. And I actually ended up agreeing, because when I thought about it, I'll give you kind of an example. So imagine someone tells you, I love Block Wars. What are they talking about? Are they talking about the event, or are they talking about Block Wars CC?
Now
imagine someone comes up to you and says, I love Block Wars Origins. Immediately on the spot, you know exactly what they're talking. They're talking about the origin side of the event, right? But when someone just says, I love Block Wars, you kind of have to put some context clues together on whether they're talking about the event. And it kind of comes down to the same thing, where usually when people want to talk about Block Wars CC, they say Block Wars CC specifically because it doesn't have a name. They have to give it a name. So with Ascension and Genesis, we were able to just, you know, it's the same thing really there. We just did the work for them, so they each have a name. For the actual names themselves, the original names I had in mind were Genesis and Echelon, because, you know, like Upper Echelon. I thought it was a really cool name, but apparently like 90% of the people I asked either couldn't spell, pronounce it, or just didn't know what it meant.
Echelon.
It kind of pissed me off. Apparently, a lot of people don't know what echelon means unless you specifically say it in the context of upper echelon. So that got scrapped, and then I eventually just had the idea of like ascension, like ascension. Why don't we just do that? And yeah, and everyone. I'll be honest. It was mostly just like me coming up with the names, and everyone being like, "I don't know, that name sucks." Oh yeah, that name's good. I was like, okay, well, why don't you do
some
this?
Use of ChatGPT at some points as well.
It did not give very good ideas. I can't lie, it gave pretty bad ideas.
Should have been a Pandora's Box better and Pandora's Box betterer.
True. Which one is which? Stay tuned.
That's left for this one to decide. Ooh. Comment down below which one is better.
Yeah, for real.
And then I mean, it's worked out perfectly because Pandora's Box obviously is now a monthly event. I guess one more question, because I know we want to get into Dragon's Pit, so we will. I this is one opportunity to talk to you guys about Pandora's Box while you're all here, so I'm using it as much as I can. Why was it originally every two months?
To be completely honest, it can be pretty much summed into two words: mental health. Mostly because making an event every month is just exhausting on the builders. It's exhausting on the organizers. It's exhausting on me as a coder. It's just really exhausting. And I feel like most events, they're kind of like just kind of like the same thing every month, with like maybe another spice or two added here and there. We could easily have added more staff. We could have added many more staff. Would it really have made a better product though? Honestly, probably not. It would have made it maybe like 1 or 2% better if we had added a bunch more staff and gone monthly. So we decided the best thing we could do for everyone was to move to it. Originally, we were going to do a month and a half format, which would have been a bit odd, but it was our first plan. But we quickly shifted again back to a 2-month plan, because we realized that the event was just going to be a lot better if we were able to actually take the time we needed, take off time, take rest days, and make sure that we're back in office. Like, I don't know if you've ever saw, you ever seen those studies or whatever, how like workplaces will try out, they'll go from like a 5-day work week to like a 4-day work week, and they'll turn out that productivity is like way higher. It's kind of like that, right? I feel like we can do so much more with more time between each event. And, you know, like, we totally could add many more staff, but I just don't think it would really make anything much better at all.
Agreed.
So let's just stick to the staff. I mean, obviously we've added more builders, but that's separate. Like, let's just stick to the crew we have and maybe add a few more faces, but figured let's just take some rest days each month or each every other month and split the event up.
Yeah, and it gave us more time for like counter push projects too, and other things that, you know, passion projects that we had and things like that as well, that wouldn't have been possible with that. Like, because I remember during the PB monthly format, it was like impossible for any development to happen on other Grunk Studios games, just because it was like so taxing on Isaac doing all the coding. You know, it's like you can't expect somebody to like dedicate after working a full-time job to also doing like a second full-time job, you know, just on coding stuff. And so yeah, like Isaac said, just on a mental health level, it was just better for sure.
You're all volunteers as far as I'm aware, right?
That's correct.
It's the same with like the podcast. I mean, I was recording and uploading new podcasts a week for an entire year straight, and the only reason I saw it out for the entire year was to say I did it for a year straight. And now that it's been that, I'm like, is it as much fun as it was? I wasn't really earning any money from the podcast, and I've taken up some other hobbies that have like been earning me more money than I have on the podcast. And I've realized, oh, like, as fun as it is, there are other kind of opportunities that I could probably take up more. So, like, I get with the whole mental health thing, is I'm basically saying I relate here in a sense. So, Dragon's Pit. I'm gonna ask a few questions here to try my luck. If at any point I step out of line, let me know. I don't think I will step out of line, because they're genuine curious questions as opposed to poking, but you'll see what I mean. Really making it sound worse than it is, right?
Yeah. it's pretty hard to focus.
Yeah, my gun ready. Like, I'm ready. Got the firing squad ready.
The first question, sure, just to get out of the way, was there an attempt at making Dragon Pit sponsored?
There was a, we had a concept of a plan. No, it was really just we discussed it, but our top priority was not on getting a sponsor. If somebody reached out and it was like a more, you know, streamlined process or something like that, probably we would have like totally been down for that. But it was just like, with development, we just had no time to think about it, to be honest. It was like, we were just so crunched, and on every side, from, you know, the organizing to the development, to the coding, to building, to everything. It was just kind of like a crazy project that, you know, by the time we could even think about it, it was like, yeah, well, we just really don't have time to even discuss it, you know?
Right, now that I've got that out of the way, when did the plan for Dragon's Pit begin?
September 2022. I actually remember. I remember that because I was sitting outside Danny's lecture room. I think I don't know if it was like a computer science class you were taking or whatever, inside the big engineering brick building.
He didn't go to my university. He just snuck in.
Yeah, I just snuck in, and I was just chilling there. And I remember because this class was like an hour and something, and I tried to like listen, but like honestly, for me, like a music guy, I could not listen to more than like 5 minutes of them talking about that stuff. I was like, okay, I'm out of here. And then I remember I was sitting there and I was like, Haunted Havoc had been retired just kind of earlier that year. And I was thinking, well, you know, Haunted Havoc is a project that everybody kind of, you know, has like this almost like a cult following. Like the game wasn't perfect. Okay. Like the game had a lot of problems and that's why it was retired. And people voiced those problems. But then for some reason, like after like 6 months, everybody forgot about all those problems and for some reason thought like the game was perfect or something. And so I was like, okay, well, what if we just like brought back, you know, Haunted Havoc in a way. And that's where I started coming up with like this idea of like Hades Havoc. And I kind of like started, you know, experimenting with some ideas, and then kind of became something where I realized that the event that housed Hades Havoc could only happen once because Hades Havoc is not a sustainable project. So then it kind of built into this like Dragon Pit thing. And then I kind of came up with some music for it, and it kind of just expanded into what it became.
And then 2 years later, it was announced and we've seen the first one. And then Genesis is happening in a week's time from recording this. It's a really weird date, right? We're recording it, then Genesis is happening a week later, then a week later this podcast comes out. So it's all a bit of a weird time frame.
Yeah.
How, a weird question, but I'm going to ask anyways. Why did it take so long? Obviously, I feel like it's such an easy answer, but I still want to ask anyways. Why did it take 2 years for this to eventually happen?
Why don't we back up a little bit to... I'm going to push us back to March 2023.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. About a month before PB6, after the Grand Return, after like, I think it was a 31 or 7.5 month hiatus from August 2022 to April 2023. Right towards the end of that, we had a meeting at a restaurant in person where Kelton basically, well, there wasn't a PowerPoint, but it essentially was a verbal PowerPoint, basically, of Kelton going over all of his ideas for Dragon Pit and basically basically the plan. But it was just said out loud. There was no like actual PowerPoint or stuff like that, but that basically was our big plan. And we didn't really learn about it that much until that big meeting, just the three of us at a restaurant. And we were gonna try and push it for August of that year, I think, or September or October, just sometime in like the summer of that month. But we realized pretty quickly that that was just kind of not really feasible. So we ended up pushing it to next year, which I believe we were originally targeting August, like September, October, but we pushed back to November because we realized it was probably the best for everyone.
Wanted the Halloween in October.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. I actually remember that. I remember that meeting. That was. I think it was like all the stuff was kind of there. I remember explaining the Garf fight as well, with like the piano buildup and everything to like the Garf and how it would all play out, and talking about all the cutscenes and things like that. And yeah, it was such an ambitious project that, you know, really quickly when we were getting into like real pre-development, kind of realized, oh yeah, you know, this is gonna be a harder project than maybe we anticipated. And then I think we really started ramping up development in probably March of this year.
I believe you started building around like March to April was when the building started.
March to April. Yeah. Cause I remember I did the presentation for the build team in March, where I kind of went over everything and we had like this big presentation on every single game. Like it was like speed run and Temple Lockout and all the kind of themes that we had for everything. And then actually, fun fact, speedrun originally was going to be just like normal speedrun, and I believe it was Scully who in the meeting suggested that there should be items like Mario Kart. And I remember sitting there and I was like, no, that's actually kind of fire. I was like, that's actually kind of a really good idea. And I'm like, and way more fun to build. And so I remember in that meeting was when I actually changed the idea of speedrun and reworked out how that game would go. And so yeah, I think right after that meeting is when development really went forward.
Most of the coding for it wasn't actually started until August. I mean, there was a few very small things done before that, but most of the coding was actually done within 2 months of the event on my end, personally. Although, of course, the building had been... It was definitely not completed, but there were many things done before then. So coding really only took about... 2 months, but again, I wasn't going to start coding till all the building was done because I needed the building to be done before I could code anything. Especially for games like Hades Havoc, it would have been really hard to code without the builds being there. There was a few things that like weren't fully done when I started coding them, but that doesn't really matter. Just had to have everything there. So I do believe we did spend the time very well. We possibly could have pushed it a month or two earlier, but it likely would not have been that much of a better event, or probably would have been worse, actually, if we'd done that. So I think that the 2 years we spent, well, really like half a year for most of us, I think was actually very well spent, and we got everything out when we wanted to. I think we did it a good time, too. I think was all worth it in the end for everyone to wait that long.
It's been pretty hard keeping it a secret, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I will admit, there was a very, very small, very tiny minor story. We were doing an escape room when we were in TwitchCon San Diego, and one of the puzzles, there was a book with the word Hades on it, and I was basically telling myself, don't make a Hades joke, don't make a Hades joke, don't make a Hades joke, even though I almost did to Kelton. I was like, wait, don't make
Isaac
a joke
looked,
about
no,
it.
No, I remember Isaac looked at me, and then looked at the book, I'm like, don't say it. Don't. It was so funny.
I was gonna be like, Hades.
Yeah, like just start baking out in the song.
I was like, don't say it.
You know, when the top hat and cane came out and I saw the bow tie, I was like, oh no, this is happening. We went straight into the musical number.
Yeah.
I feel like a really easy question would be, will we see Dragon Pit return again? But I wanna reword it to make it slightly more interesting for my sake anyways. Will we see any of Dragon Pit Intrigate? Let me reword that. Will we see any of Dragon Pit like used in the main Pandora's box? Like, will any of the games, will any of the assets, will any of the concept, will you add that to PB?
There were a few minor things that could definitely be added, which I may or may not be able to go into specifics about. There are a few things that I can definitely say won't be coming to the main event, such as, I'm going to confirm it right now, Hades Havoc will not be returning to main events, because we have essentially served... Minecraft event games essentially need to be non-perishable in a way. Like, sometimes they can get stale, but, like, you want to be serving up non-perishable food, like, non-perishable games. Like, SG, you can theoretically run SG as it is with no changes for basically the rest of Pandora's Box's lifespan, and it's going to be okay. Whether people like the game is a different story, but it's going to be still a good game regardless, right? And same for goes for, like, Hyperdrive, Chalice Chase is definitely going to be able to last forever, Temple Lockout. But with Hades Havoc, we've essentially served up a hot plate that has a whole time of one use, basically. It's a one use game. Once you've played it once, you can never really experience it again properly. Like, I'm gonna be honest, the last few full tests were basically just speedrunning contests of Hades Havoc, because basically with a few small exceptions, I believe that we had like one new player in like the last full test, or the second last,
We took all the tests after the first two with like a grain of salt, because we knew those first two tests were the most important for that game, because that was where you saw the real experience that the players are gonna have, for sure.
And the last and basically everything else after that was basically just speedrunning contests, and if we found a bug we fixed it, and that was basically it.
We found a lot, though. We found a lot of little bugs, and we fixed all of them.
Well, most of them were in the first two or three tests, thankfully.
True.
Except for one we fixed on like the last day before the event, which I don't know how it lasted that long with only one fail or only one misfire.
And then will we see, I guess the more basic question, and will we see Dragon's Pit return and like maybe next Halloween?
So I'll take that question. So given how successful the event was, we were totally interested in like doing another event, but we don't exactly have a date planned. And I think the reason is just because it's such a demand on the builders and on everybody on the team, you know, coding, music, modeling, all of that stuff. It's just a lot of time. And without a lot of like monetary backing, I think it's just really hard to ask people to give that much time to another event project, you know, because this, I think, this was probably one of the first events that was done in the scene that had been a project kind of created as a one-time sort of Twitch Rivals-esque type of game or type of event that hadn't been done by like a really big, you know, company. And, you know, we kind of did it out of like a passion project. And I know like a huge amount of credit to the builders who dedicated like 5 months of their lives to just working straight on this project. But, you know, that's where, I mean, it's possible for sure. It's just, I think there would have to be, you know, I think the context would be very different for a second event such as this.
That's fair. I mean, you could always just, like, I know you wouldn't want to, but as a basis, you could always just reuse the event next year anyways, right? Like, to put it really... I'm being really arrogant to dev work and build work here. I'm saying it's a very basic, arrogant sense of you could just rerun the event next year. Obviously, I know you wouldn't want
to. It would be like rewatching Interstellar, you know, for, like, the second or third time. Like, it just doesn't hit the same.
I mean, I rewatched The Hunger Games every, like, 6 or 7 months, and I still love it.
Okay, well, that one's kind of a fun one. He's like, oh, he died again.
Yeah, but I feel like it would basically be like, to bring back the food example, it would basically be like if we put it in the freezer for like a year and brought it back.
Michael,
like,
yeah.
I don't know about you, but like some people, and myself included, I don't really like frozen meat that much if it's been frozen already. It just doesn't taste the same anymore, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it would be like if we put like a bunch of, if we put the meat back in the freezer for like a year, or maybe probably 6 months or however long you can legally hold it for, and brought it back and like de-thawed it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not going to taste the same, I feel like. I mean, Hades, there would be many things that would have to be reworked, but even if we like reworked all the Hades Havoc games and stuff like that, then like redid the Gar fight and redid everything, it still just wouldn't really be as special anymore. If we were to do like a new event, it would basically have to be like brand new, like everything.
Yeah, brand new
much.
Idea.
We could theoretically make a Hades Havoc 2, but it would have to be like very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And you know, I think that's as on the artistic side too. Like, an event like Dragon Pit was a big artistic vision, I think, from all sides, right? I think we put 110% on all teams into, I mean, like, let's just look at, like, even, like, Danny, who had never modeled something before, and then went in and, like, created all these crazy custom models, or, like, yeah, like, all of these insane things that, you know, like, the builders took on. Like, I knew builders that started as, like, you know, kind of builders that only did, like, basic terraforming or basic structures, like Wask, for example, or you know, Blazy, who kind of did some, a little bit of project leads here and there, but then became full-fledged, like, lead builders in their own right. You know, I think everybody just put in so much work. And of course, me and Isaac, like in the last 2 weeks, just like, I remember Isaac, it would be like every day we'd just be doing progress checks over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like, to as that came together and created, you know, something that, you know, I feel like on the event day went, you know, amazing. Like, honestly, I wouldn't change it for the world. It was a completed artistic vision. I think something like that for us being a one-time event has made it all the more special, because I think that's it's legacy, right? It's there and it's experienced, and that's what we made it for. It was for the viewers, it was for the players, you know, to experience something like that for the first time. And I think that's why we probably would never run that exact event again. We would instead, if we were to do it, another one would be something completely new and surprise people in this, you know, yet again, right? I think that's
like, that would, I know, like other events they do like season one or season two, but like it would be more of, it wouldn't be a new chapter, it would be like a whole new book. That makes sense.
We'd want to go from Breath of the Wild to Tears of the Kingdom.
We'd want to go more than like, that, actually. Fiction. We'd want to go Pulp Fiction to Inglourious Basterds. That's where we're going. Like, that's kind of, I think, the artistic idea about events such as this, because it's such a special feeling to see people experience these things for the first time. And, you know, as the developers, I think it was very unique for us to have created something that, I mean, the reception of it was really nice, and the things that some of the creators were saying on Twitter, you know, was really rewarding for us to hear. And so, yeah, I think, you know, if we were to draft up a new one, we'd want to go even crazier than this one, I guess.
Pandora's Box has a bunch of very loyal content creators who love the event and want to sign up and play every single season. I have always loved the concept of an event that has team captains, and hopefully I haven't been shared misinformation here, but I'm pretty sure I'm correct. Each of the teams for Dragon Pit had a captain, right, who chose their team.
Yes. What we did was, originally we had kind of talks with the Block Wars lead, Wolfie, who kind of just gave us some advice for what we should do. And I think honestly the best piece of advice he could have ever given us, and I'm so glad he gave us this advice, was he said, why don't you do what you did in what we did in Rookies, where you ask the players to come to us and then say, I want this team. Can we have this team in Pandora's Box? Because I think if we hadn't done that, we would have gotten maybe half or less than half of what we currently, or what we were able to get for Dragon Pit. Essentially what happened was we just told the players, this is going to be like a captain system similar to Block Wars Rookies. If you want to have a team, if you have a team that you think is cool, come to us, tell us the teams, and then we'll figure it out. So we had like some offers, and we kind of just went through the offers, like what we think was the most hype, what we think was like super cool. I usually like never deal with Ascension. It's always Master Garf. I leave that to him. But for this one, I got involved. I was like talking with, I was helping get the team for Bablu, Andres, Stu, and I was in talks. Super Ninja, and I was in talks with a couple other people that obviously we had a lot of offers, so we couldn't do everything. But Garf, obviously, big shout out to him. He was able to get the majority of the teams. And a lot of the thing again is that often when you say get us a cool team, people don't realize it's like, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to build off of this event. We want something that's hype, something that we get people talking, right? So sometimes when people see cool, they think, oh, just me and my friends who are already in Pandora's box. But then both me and Master Garf did a lot of work talking to these players, kind of explaining what we wanted, kind of explaining what the vision was, and like maybe like suggesting like here and there, like, oh, this guy's like way bigger on YouTube. You think you can maybe stream on YouTube instead of Twitch? Talking to like here, like some of these guys are some of your friends. Do you think any of them would be interested? And talking like that, and then the players, big shout out to all the team captains. They were super supportive. They were super helpful, and we couldn't have done it without them. We talked to those guys. We were able to get pretty insane teams.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is, you weren't misinformed. That is how it happened. It was kind of I don't want to say draft system, because draft kind of implies that you know, you had like a big list of players and each guy had to choose their, you did like a snake draft or whatever.
But that's draft, kind of, I guess, not Pandora's box.
Yeah. draft in the sense of we just told them to go out into the wilderness and bring us back some players, you know, and they did, and they did really well.
Yeah,
you know, sure. You scratch my back and I scratch yours, you exactly. Go out and find three players and I'll give you a slot in the event.
Yeah.
As Hades would say.
I love it when there's a team captain, and just to see teams like that. And it's what I kind of wanted to do for like special events. It's kind of harder with Mayhem, because like how many kind of quote unquote special events can you really do and get away with? But like with Dragon Pit, it works perfectly. At the same time though, obviously a lot of the people who play the regular Pandora's box, because of that, and the teams for Genesis have been announced, and a lot of the names that normally are in Pandora's box weren't in that. Was it announced to the players that they would, like, did they know this was going to happen, or was it just like surprise? Like, we're doing team captains. It's not really a big deal. I'm just more curious than anything.
Yeah, no, 100% we announced it early.
We told.
Like, it was like right after TwitchCon, because we met up with a lot of people in TwitchCon and kind of talked about the event. And I think we might have even like released it before TwitchCon. Like when we released
the trailer came out on the 15th, I believe. It was the Sunday before, we flew it on Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, that's right. And I think Garf made the announcement on the Monday, right? So I think the players had like an idea of what Dragon Pit was gonna be or something. We weren't like exactly crystal clear on exactly how the event format would work. Like at that point, we hadn't decided a captain system yet. Basically, I think all we said was like, if you're interested in the event, you know, it's going to be like, we're not going to have normal signups, but if you're interested, just like, you know, react to this message or something like that. And then we kind of went in and decided a few things on like how we were going to do the Genesis stuff. And yeah, that's kind of our process. It was kind of like, we sort of went about it as the event evolved, and we kind of discussed things with Wolfie, like Danny was saying, and stuff like that, and then it kind of just became what it was. And it was about a month before the event that we kind of did the whole captains thing. And yeah, so I think that's how that whole process kind of went about.
We did announce it to them prior, I believe. I think it was like just a bit after the trailer, but we didn't really start to like gather the captain. Like people knew what was gonna happen, but we didn't really like go out and start getting offers and like working with the captains until a bit later. It was about a month before the event, or I guess about like roughly like 3 weeks before like team reveals, really, is when we started to kind of organize. Okay, it's like so far, like I think at that point only like three captains had really shown interest, or had actually given us like a full set of players, and maybe a couple others had shown interest. So at that point we were like talking with those who had shown interest, those who had given us teams, and starting to organize like, here's like, what can you do for us, like you know, what players do you have in mind, maybe you could do this and other stuff.
Did Genesis have captains as well, or were they made teams?
No, actually, here's a little also leak, not really a leak because I'm fully honest about it, but the reason that there was no invites to TB14 Genesis was specific specifically because of Dragon Pit. I did not want to add anyone to Genesis because I wanted Dragon Pit to be a love letter to the players who had stuck around with us for so long. I would have thought of it as disrespectful if we had invited new players to PB Genesis and had them play in Dragon Pit over the players who have stuck around with us for so long, right? That's specifically why I didn't. The reason we had two invites was for sub purposes. And I wouldn't have mind them playing. What ended up happening though with Genesis was I told people balancing isn't really gonna matter too much. Just don't make a super team, and if you have a super weak team, then you know what you're doing. Like you'll have fun. But I basically said feel free to force stack. I don't care. Which is why, like, if you see the Genesis teams, they look very force stacky because they are. Six out of eight of the teams are force stack. So people can say, oh, it's not really balanced. Why is Kel so nerfed? That's his four stack. He wanted that. Why is Toph so Mickey? That's his four stack. He wanted that. And we just gave it to him. Like, there was obviously some duels that I had to kind of deal with, and like I think one or two duels had to get split, unfortunately, just because I wanted to put our biggest supporters in. It was actually really hard to make Genesis teams this time around, and not because balance didn't matter. It was just because I had to find a way to make as many people as possible happy. I went through 14 drafts before I finally found something that worked, and I think these are the best possible teams I could have done. I don't think there is any other possible situation that works where more people are happy than the current teams.
I want to make a note here as a reminder to the listeners. This podcast is being recorded on Sunday the 10th. The event isn't happening till Sunday the 17th. So if any changes are made to the teams or anything like that, this is being purely recorded before the event. So we're talking about the current teams as of Sunday the 10th of November.
Right, yeah.
Just to make it clear. Just in case anyone subs out or anything happens.
Sure.
Better safe than sorry.
Appreciate it.
Sweet DDoS, Abby.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
In
case Danny ends up subbing in and then it just sounds like an ego boost.
Oh, no.
But he sees you amazing, especially that one that I'm on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what? There were six games in Dragon Pit, right? There's normally eight in a normal PB, I believe. So what? Mm-hmm. What were the name of the six games in Dragon Pit?
So we got Speedrun. I'm just gonna name them how they played out in the event. So yeah, Speedrun, yeah. SV, Hades Havoc, Hyperdrive, Temple Lockout, and Gauntlet were the main six games. And then of course there was the one round of Call of Coliseum, and then the Garf fight phase one and two are kind of everything.
What is Hades Havoc? It's been mentioned a few times this podcast. If someone who doesn't know what it is, what rundown?
So basically Hades Havoc is a team puzzle game where Hades is this kind of flamboyant character, sucks you down to the underworld and then has you doing his bidding, where you gotta run around this really big, like almost like an RPG map in the underworld, and go to different monsters and complete their mini games to collect soul contracts, and then you bring them back to Hades and he gives you some time on your clock so you don't run out and die, and then he gives you some points too. And then if you do end up running out of time though, or if you complete all of his little mini games, you get to the second phase of the game where you end up in an escape room with your team, and you get to gamble on if you think your team will complete Hades challenge. And players actually don't know what the challenge is, so when they go into it, they actually have no idea that it's an escape room. They just kind of are wagering blind, and they get to wager up to half of their accumulated points throughout the underworld section. And then if they complete the escape room, they'll get double the points. But if they fail, then they lose all of the points they wagered. So that's kind of how the general structure of that game functions. It also opens with a musical number, which is really cool.
Are you singing it by any chance?
I can sing it. I sang it terribly. You know, like the tyrant in hell who's a hit with all the ladies.
Hades. Yeah, I don't hear this anymore.
Yeah,
no,
I'm sorry.
I need to. Sorry. Sadly, I didn't get to hear it.
I'm sorry.
No, sadly, I missed out. So I need you to sing it for me, please. Just so I can hear it and remind myself, of course.
And I remember when I sent over the vocal track, because I sang over the original song. I sent it to the singer I got on Fiverr, and it was so bad. Like, my vocals were so bad. I was so out of key. And I remember I messaged her. I'm like, I'm sorry. I cannot sing to save my life. I am so out of it. She's like, oh,
yeah, it was more like, it's more about the rhythm and stuff like that. I got you. And I was like, okay, thank you. But that was, yeah, I think such a cool way to open up the event, or not the event, the mini game. And I think everybody in this call here had a huge hand in making that,
including me,
happen. Yeah, including you, including you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, the moral support for the whole thing. Couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I didn't message any of you once. I actually I've only just met you, Rezendo. It's lovely to meet you, by the way. I just said that.
Very nice to meet you too. But yeah, no, I think originally that idea, because that was not in the original plan for Dragon Pit, and it only came about because I was working in finance before I left that position. And I remember I was driving up and I was doing like this run because there was like a package I had to deliver to somebody 40 minutes out of the town. Like, it was a long drive. And I remember I was just sitting there and I was kind of humming this thing. And I remember I got the melody for Thieves Havoc, and I was like, something, 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 who's a hit with all the ladies? And I was like, Hades, Hades. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love that so much. I have to have this in the event. So I think that's how it kind of all started. And yeah, the rest is kind of history.
Fair enough.
Making that cutscene took some work as well from all of us.
Yeah.
I believe a lot of the cutscenes were actually done by Kelton coming over to my house, and we actually used a download of the server to avoid lag issues and to record the cutscenes as well, like in real time on the server itself or on my local download of the server. And then we had all the cutscene pathing and like that, so it basically like followed a spectator mode path, the cutscenes.
Yeah.
And then Danny then later put all the models into the game, and also I taught him how to like put the models in with the music, and he made it all work really well. Oh, and then I just added the lyrics at the bottom. That was basically my role in it.
Yeah, I remember recording those cutscenes. It was so awesome, because through this whole experience, like, we would go to each other's houses and just kind of like collaborate. And I remember Isaac honestly made probably one of the best cutscene systems in the event space. Like, I know a lot of events would probably love to have something so accessible, because Isaac made the cutscene system specifically so that I could do it. Like, I could record it, and it was amazing. I remember we were kind of doing our little cutscene thing, and I was sitting at Isaac's computer, and Isaac was on my computer just pressing play on the music, and we'd like record each scene to try to like score it to the song. Oh, it was so funny. And it worked so well. Like, but there were some days it was so long. Like, we were there, what, like, I think we had like a 10-hour day or something like that.
It was like an 11-hour. I think it was like 9-10 hours without breaks. Or no, it was like nine. And, I think it was 9.5 without breaks, actually. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but it was,
I think
so
it was like
fun.
11 in total. With yeah, dinner and the Dairy Queen run.
And Dairy Queen, because we forgot one of the cutscenes at a certain point. We were like, we were going through, and I was like, Isaac, I'm like, I forgot one. We were like, okay, time for overtime. So we went to
grocery. Okay, to be fair, I think we actually forgot two more
after that. Yeah,
but so those ones were really easy because we didn't have any filming. It was just like a static shot, and the other one was like the fireball cutscene, which I just made it track the fireball. The funny thing is, with the fireball cutscene, the actual camera just follows the fireball. I didn't time it at all. I just coded the camera to just follow the fireball.
Yeah,
I didn't even code it.
Yeah.
And then the Garf climbing one is just a static shot, and then it just goes downwards, so there was no filming required. So those ones we didn't really care about.
Yeah.
I won't say I'm shocked, because I'd expect nothing less from you guys, but I am very, very impressed at how like good Dragon Pit was, and I think a lot of people share that view.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Sure. Hope it was the event of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely up there. If it wasn't already, then it definitely is now. I before recording this podcast, I decided to remind myself of the update video, and I want to know who came up with the amazing update video, because that is just, it was so informational, so helpful. Like, I loved it.
Gone.
I think I had the original idea of just making like a fake out update video where it just like has the intro, then like
I
just
the 1 minute
has, like a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah,
and I think but Danny put it all together and came up with the specific text and ideas, I believe.
Yeah, I was kind of like the main lead marketing for this in terms of the videos, like all six videos plus all the six like game teasers plus the update video plus the trailer. Obviously, the trailer was like a collaborative effort. Kelton and I actually storyboarded that like with drawings.
Yeah, at Gekka's house, right? We did Gekka's house, I think. Yeah.
It was. But like all the teasers were kind of just me alone, kind of just in the shower thinking like, what's something funny I could do that would... Because the thing is, between the trailer and the event, we didn't want people to forget about it or the hype to die down, right? We needed something that would keep the hype up. So I had the idea of making teasers. Actually, the idea started because I was taking a shower, and then I was thinking about, like, imagine Pandora's Box did, like, an interview with players. And then I started imagining, like, what would happen if we asked players their opinions on SG. And I specifically remember, like, this was actually what based the entire idea of that SG teaser was, like, if I asked Chaos, would he even answer the other questions, or would he just glaze SG for, like, a solid 2 minutes? And I was like, wait, that would be really, really funny. So, like, what if we just made that a teaser? But I was like, it's kind of weird as a teaser to do an interview. So then I thought, what if each of the teasers has their own, like, theme in a sense. So that's, yeah. So we did an old style commercial for Gauntlet. We did for SG, it was like the interview. Everyone loved that one. For Hyperdrive, it was like, what's it called? Analog Horror.
Analog.
Yeah. The Hades Havoc one. Yeah, Speedrun. Speedrun was a fun one to make. I wanted to do like a crappy trailer, you know? Like crappy movie trailer. That was
Like 2007 for. Trailer for like
that. Yeah, so, like almost like what you see of like a Michael Bay parody, you know? That's what I was going for. And then what else was there? What's the other game? Hades Havoc and Temple Lockout, which was Temple Lockout was more lore focused. That one was more about like the lore of the map. And then Hades Havoc, we just wanted to kind of show as originally my plan was to show as little as possible. My plan was just do like a 30-second video of almost nothing, right? Just like show some scenes, kind of like you know the, you ever watched the Hades Havoc teaser?
I would have to refresh myself, but I do remember. Yeah, I mean, I kept up with all of them, so I remember watching it. I don't really remember how it went.
It was the one where it went over all the dead games, kind of like in a, it had some detective music and it went over all the dead games, and then there would be random cut-ins. Yeah, so all those cut-ins, if you piece them together, is actually what my original plan for the video was. But I thought that was kind of boring. So I was like, what if we fake it out by making people have no idea what the last game is? So I was like, okay, let's do this like detective style video of showing all the dead games, like, guys, maybe one of the dead games is coming back. And then fake it out again with Trials of Fire being like, oh, maybe it's Trials of Fire that's gonna be the game. But I did want people to have the idea of it being a puzzle game. And obviously, like, we did want people to think about Haunted Havoc, because a lot of people who would think about Haunted Havoc, every time they think about it, they'd be like, no, they're not doing that. They're just trolling us. They're just being mean. But like,
that we wanted the update video too. We actually
trolled them. We wanted to implant seeds of doubt into people's heads, because we knew how much Haunted Havoc was loved and how hyped people would be as soon as they saw the text, Hades Havoc. People would scream. Right, that's what we wanted. So that's what I was going for with those last two teasers, was specifically to kind of just to fake people out and make people think haunted Havoc.
I have searched far and wide, high and low, all across social media. I'm very confident in my question here, and it's going to be very embarrassing if I'm wrong. Why doesn't Pandora's Box have a YouTube channel?
We just post them on my own channel, the update videos.
Like, I guess update videos, like, if we wanted, we could make shorts, I guess.
Well, we'd have to get someone else to do them, probably. I don't think we have time.
I
mean,
like, I could do them.
You could, maybe,
I don't know, I'd have the time or motivation to go and make, like, a short every week.
Yeah, we all know how long that Rookies video is taking, buddy.
Okay. Eventually, I promise. But yeah, like, it's, there's just not really much that we would put. Like, maybe I guess the teasers would have been cool, but I feel like almost all of our audience is on Twitter, X the Everything app. So, like, really, there is just nothing that we need. Like, I've thought about it 100%, but I don't know. It's really just update videos, and that's it.
I was thinking it to myself, so I was thinking about, like, Block Wars and Mayhem and Mania and all that the other day, right? I was thinking, like, I wonder why events don't capitalize on, like, the more update videos and then, like, maybe, like, little things about games and then top 10 plays. Like, I kind of always wondered to myself why events don't do all of this on their own channels. But then you just get someone to do it, right? You just hire someone to hire.
We don't even have to. Like, there is people, like, you saw, I don't remember what channel it was. It was like an MCC channel that did like a video of like all Hades Havoc gem locations and puzzles, and they actually just wanted the gem locations because nobody got it. But it was like we don't really even have to do that. Like, I think you get to a point where people just do like top 10 plays for you, and it's like, that's cool, because then you're also giving back to the community instead of us doing like top 10 plays, which we could, and then, you know, we could capitalize off that. But in the other sense, we can let the community make those videos, and then
choose their their own top 10s.
Yeah, like they can choose their own top 10s. That can spark discussion among themselves, and they can also profit off of, you know, like talking about our event, right? So we're kind of giving back to the community in a sense.
Well, I feel like if we made like a top 10, we'd have to like objectively be correct in the top 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would be like
the Pandora's Box top 10.
We could do like top 10 fails or like top 10 fails would be pretty easy actually, but
there's definitely some plays that are like pretty near objective, like best plays, but then like it's all like top 10 per event is, that's more of a subjective thing. And if the official Pandora's Box is making a top 10, then people will kind of take that as the word of God.
Yeah, I think top 10 fails would be funny though. I think number one is probably R and SG probably. That's bro, Stu and Colby on the last Dragon's Pit Hyperdrive at the very end, bro.
Oh,
no.
My God.
Yeah, funny.
Beautiful clips.
And also, just Stu and Hades Havoc escape room.
Oh, God. That was... He was just watching.
I think that unironically might be worse than R falling into lava. Like, that, I think that actually might move up to number one of all time, just because of the fact that it impacted the whole team. Because R kind of only trolled himself, right? But I think that actually impacted the whole team, so I think that actually might have moved up to number one.
It was so funny, though. His stream, he was so... He just looked so clueless. Like, he was just staring at them, and they were just, like, failing. He was like, what's going... They're, like, yelling at him, what do I do? And he's just not answering. He's just watching them. It was so funny. Bad for Cub Ben, though. Like, Ikey.
Oh, poor guy.
But that's what I mean, though. Like, just that you can do funny things like that you're interested in. I don't know. I just feel like events could capitalize more on doing their own kind of videos about their own events on their own channel.
I
understand the whole viewer thing, because, I mean, I do it with all things MCC. I do top 10 plays for MCC. We're looking at doing other videos for it. So I know what you mean. But at the same time, I've just always wondered. Like, for instance, Inside MC, the last Inside MC event, we did the top 10 plays on Inside MC. We're most likely going to do it for the Mania event as well.
I 100% agree with you. I think it just comes down to like getting the people to do it, and it's like the time commitment.
Indeed. What were your you've technically already answered this, Resendor, but I'm gonna ask it again anyways. If you guys had to pick one game from Pandora's Box, Dragon Pit specifically, what game would you choose that's like your favorite game, or one game if you only got to play one of the games?
Hades Havoc. Okay, I'm sorry. I think you're gonna get the same answer for everyone.
I think I'm gonna go with like a little bit of a kind of a curveball answer, because I think Hades Havoc was by far the most fun game to watch, and I think as a conceptual idea was so I think rewarding, and I don't know, it kind of, and validating, I guess, because you put so much time into one project, and for it to work out like that, it was really awesome to see. But I think the most fun project, I know, right? But I think the most fun project to work on in the entire thing and the entire event was, for me, Temple Lockout. I think going to, because Gega also, so Gega Lord, DJ Gega Lord, a character in Pandora's Box Dragon Pit, but also a builder for the team. He also lives in the same city that we do, Calgary. And I think that what made that project so special is I actually went to his house for like 4 days, and we just had, we called it like boot camp, because in August we needed to finish Temple Lockout, Speedrun, and Gauntlet, all the builds in that 1 month. And I remember we just like, we locked in and we just worked for like 4 days straight, like from literally sunrise to sunset on that building project, on top of also like recording all the early voice lines. And like, everybody thought the voice lines were gonna be so cringe. Oh my God. Like, I remember when we wrote the dialogue, everyone was like, this is gonna be so bad, the voice lines are gonna be so cringe. And I remember I was like recording it with Gega, and I was like, okay, we gotta make these not cringe. She's like, okay, I got you. And he records, and he's such a great voice act, and we get the lines, and I mix them and do like the vocal production and stuff like that, and we send it out. And I think like that alone, like his voice lines alone, made everybody realize that, oh shit, this is actually not bad, you know?
Yeah, that actually was that was my incentive. That changed on my perspective. I was like, I don't know why I never thought of the idea, oh wait, Calvin could just mix up our voices to not sound stupid.
Yeah, you know, just put some vocal production, some reverb in there, sounds way better, right? And then so like, I think it was just that little thing and that boot camp, you know. Not only, you know, did me and Gega become much closer friends, because we were, you know, like I was at his house with his family, and that was amazing, but also just working together, and it was such a collaborative process. So just being like looking over to like his screen, you know, in the same room, and being like, hey, I really like this, but I think you should do that. And he's like, okay. And he would look at my screen and we kind of like collaborate, and then all the builders would be in the VCs too, because they would just, you know, we were on all day, right? And everybody would hop in, and, you know, we'd have like six builders working at a time. And yeah, it was just an awesome 4 days. So I think that was probably the best memory of the entire development experience for me, for sure.
If you had to pick one individual favorite moment from Ascension or Dubai, there has to be like, it doesn't have to be like from the event itself. It can be either a great moment, it can be a funny moment, it can just be something that's like, as soon as I said that sentence, what did you think of, Vida?
The first thing that came up to mind was Diamond's Hades Havoc finale. Yeah. It was so funny.
Seriously, you got the whole squad laughing pretty much.
Literally, everyone. I think on rewatch, Feinberg playing Gas Blast, just giggling, like, and just loving the game. I thought that was just awesome.
Have you seen the Curry Way clip on when he's in the Crow Cage Cliffs and he has to, if you don't remember Orbitz, Crow Cage Cliffs was the game where the pots would kind of shuffle around and you had to track them with a gem and then choose the one with the gem.
Yeah, I've seen kind of like, you know, Curry Way clip on Twitter.
Yeah, that clip that was probably also like, obviously I didn't watch any players' perspectives. I had like Spreen open in the background because I wanted to like translate for the team what was going on with that team, but I didn't watch that until after the event. I thought that was such a funny clip.
Well then.
Also, I think another thing too, if I remember back, was when Saber's pause line was played for the first time. Everybody just loved that. They couldn't believe that we had lines for every game for pausing, and then like Shane tried to get the pause lines out of every other game.
Because they thought it was rigged too. Because when they didn't, obviously at that first moment, it didn't click for them that we had every character with a pause and a disconnect line, right? So people like at first were like, wait, did they just script this pause? Like, why is there a most time playing?
No, it's not scripted. Well, I mean, it is scripted, but it's like, it happens when an actual pause happens or disconnect.
Oh, so yeah, since this is coming out after Genesis, that means we can leak the fact that Hades has a 3-minute rant as his pause line.
Yeah, we'll get to hear it in Genesis.
That depends on if they pause.
We'll find out. I mean, it's 3 minutes.
We'll always release it like later for people who want to hear it, because all of the voice lines are being released, right?
Yeah,
something about it is that YouTube channel. All the voice lines are said like through the subtitles in chat. The 3-minute monologue does not have any subtitles. It straight up just says, "I'm not writing this," pretty much.
I'm not paid enough for this.
I think one says, "I'm not paid enough for this." The other one just says, "I'm not writing any of this down. Just listen," or something.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, unless any of you have anything else to say about Pandora's Box or Dragon Pit, then I think it's time for the Twitter questions. Did any of you have anything else to say that you wanted to, or?
I think that covers it, yeah.
I think we've done a decent job, I guess. You know, somewhat, right?
Been amazing.
Right.
Great host.
Thank you. Right, Twitter, here we go.
Oh, boy.
So, first one is just from Danny. It's already a question. They just said that their ugly ass is front and center. We made it, chat.
Just my skin, it's so beautiful.
I actually got the order in the tweet right as well. The Colorball, Danny, and Resendor, which it was Colorball, Danny, Resendor.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of Resendor, they said, my Minecraft character looks exactly like me, so you know. I actually don't fair.
You see it like, because I based it on Aragorn from the Lord of the Rings or whatever, and it's so funny because I am like, I cannot grow a beard to save my life. I could never do it in a million years because got like Asian and Scandinavian genes, so it's like no hair whatsoever. But my character just has like a full beard, and I find it so funny that like I could never do that ever. And so I always say that like I look exactly like my character in real life. Totally.
I think you do. Yeah, the red eyes and everything as well. So.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think it's quite accurate.
Right. So the actual first one comes from Jokana-san. Hello, Jokana. Jokana does my shorts. So.
DPC cast for GOAT.
Who also for was real, a player.
yeah, GOAT.
Insane sub.
How much attention / resources would you guys say Groink gives to each of its projects? PB, Combat Court, etc., etc. We actually didn't even bring up Combat Court. So nice.
Yeah. Well, Combat Court we're associated with because wasn't made by us. It was made by Steinvolt, but we helped support it when needed, like with the tournaments. Mm-hmm. And also giving it a place to advertise itself in our server.
Yeah.
So it's more of like a second party development, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
We're the publishers.
I would say that, like, I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it really depends on the, like, and what.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I think there's no real answer to that. For Dragon Pit, for example, like, I ran a lot of, like, counterpush balancing and map design and stuff like that for that project, but I dropped literally the entire project, including playing it, because I used to be, like, addicted. So I, like, would play that almost every week at the very least. But now, like, when Dragon Pit came up, I think it was, like, full throttle on Dragon Pit, and we dropped pretty much every other project until, like, a little bit in July when we, like, hosted another CPC. But then besides that, yeah, we were just, like, fully into one project. So I feel like for us, it's kind of like we put our maximum effort into making the project we're currently working on the best.
Yeah.
The next one then comes from Abby. When is Pandora's Box Island?
Well,
2027 confirmed.
Yeah, that's true. 2027. Next question.
I will hold you.
Okay, no, I'm kidding. But anyway, so
no jokes there. Sorry.
Most of it is the fact that I think a lot of the games on the public server would just not be special anymore. Like, if I look at the game roster right now, SG, Chalice Chase and SG, I guess, could work, but Chalice Chase would, like, make it boring in the event. Gauntlet would make it boring in the event. Temple Lockout would just make it boring. I mean, Colosseum you could easily recreate if you wanted.
You can't run Trials of Fire or Hades Havoc for sure.
Yeah, good luck with those ones.
Unless you made it like a speedrunning contest.
I guess Void Down, if you want to recreate it, go ahead. Cool. I don't really care, but...
Actually, we do care. Please don't.
Yeah, don't. But don't host it publicly and invite our players, really. I mean, Jumping Med 2 is just parkour. So it's not really anything recreatable.
Chalice Chase could be fun. Chalice Chase Minor Mania.
It could be, but I mean, when it comes to public games, we'd kind of rather just put bigger projects like Counterpush out as the public game rather than like our own Pandora's Box event games. We'd kind of just rather have like admittedly a lot of the games I feel like wouldn't really be replayable in a public context. Like, I mean, sure, we could say that we play Chalice Chase for hours. Would we really play Chalice Chase for like more than an hour or two for a week?
If event games work because of the fact that you play them so unoften. So having like Chalice Chase, well, it's such a fun game to play. If I had to play that game for 3+ hours, I would get so bored. There's not that much you can do. I don't know how people can play Sky Battle so often, because I don't think there's a single event game in existence that can be played to like that much, because there's just not that much to it.
Haunted Havoc.
The only exception would possibly be Jumping Mad 2, but that's mostly you get bored of the level. You get bored of the levels, not the gameplay, really, in that case. So it would still be the same issue. So I feel like, I think what like MCCI did with like the parkour where it's like viewer submitted parkour, I think was really good, because it made the game like kind of feel special. So in theory, we could do a viewer generated Jumping Mad 2 or Voidbound, but like, would it really be that fun? I mean, probably would be for a little bit, but I feel like it just wouldn't really be worth maintaining. I feel like, and then it would degrade the actual event. I feel like when it comes to public games, we'd rather stick to games like Counterpush that are like extremely replayable. Like Counterpush is still replayable many years later, and it probably it'll need an update soon-ish, probably coming by the end of the year or next year, but it's like replayable forever, and I feel like we'd rather stick to games like that that we know are going to be replayable for a very, very long time and have so much depth to them, rather than event games that can kind of like just burn out pretty quickly in the public eye.
Next up is Chaos 21A. What is the biggest goal for the Grunk Studios / Pandora's Box team moving forward?
That is actually a really good question. I think it more pertains to each of us individually, I would say, rather than the full collective, because I think when it comes to Grunk Studios, now that Dragon Pit is over, I think we're kind of going back to our normal like projects, like our almost like our normal schedule, which feels a little strange, I'm not gonna lie, because I think like when I now, like after the event, I kind of feel like weird because I'm not working as much, because I'm like so much of my free time is now available, and I'm like, this is weird, like what am I supposed to do now, you know, sort of thing. Exactly. And so I think we'll probably go back to doing some work on Counterpush, because our community there, like, I mean, amazing, like Coolberg and Hi-Fi, Pokefin, a lot of the Avery Me, a lot of the players who kind of have kept that community going through this competitive server that they've been running, have been kind of on life support to a degree without our like development, because we haven't done patches and we haven't maps content. So I think just giving a little bit of like love to that game for sure would be something that we're planning on. And I think we've already talked about, like, we definitely have considered making another big event in the future, but like I said, there just have to be certain conditions met for that to happen. But I think that's
my opinion. Counterpush Dragon Pit.
Which rivals, reach out to us, we're open.
Which contenders, Dragon Pit. And it would be, imagine you're in the final, the best of seven, and after the first game on Nunala Islands, suddenly Nunala Islands gets blown up, and then you have to defeat
Groink.
And then all 10 players have to team up on Team Groink from 2021.
Yeah, wait, for real.
Oh my god.
Crazy. Oh, what if you did like a final like Fortnite boss battle?
Yeah. You have to defeat a giant Danny and Kelton and their squad.
We're following up with doggy PPPs.
I'll do you one better. So it's a Twitch Rivals event, right? Live, in person, mm-hmm. TwitchCon 2026. Final two teams, right? They come up against a massive Dan Clancy, all right? And then whoever deals the most damage wins $5,000.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we can even fake a power outage. Like, just fake a power outage for, like, after, like, the first round of whatever, the ending. Just fake a power outage in, like, the player area. Yeah. Just, like, quickly turn off all the lights and monitors. Yeah, just fake a power outage.
Players? Oh, that would be so awesome.
It's like Ariana Grande, but better. In Fortnite.
Low bar.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't say that.
The next one is from Evil Alex. How was it like to make the musical segment in Dragon's Pit?
I think we already touched on that a little bit.
I guess more for, like, a timestamp here is what I was asking.
Yeah, I think the musical segment, I think I could go more in depth into, like, the production of the song, because that was definitely a really interesting process, because I had never written, like, any lyrics before. I mean, maybe, like, for, like, some random, like, Mad vs. City rap battle or whatever, but, like, nothing substantial. And so for that process, it was very cool to write a musical number. I had a lot of, like, inspiration from, like, Disney musicals, like, Friends on the Other Side and stuff like that. And I just kind of wanted to create a cool theme, but honestly, it wouldn't have been possible without, of course, the vocalist Joanna Lee. I mean, amazing vocal talent. And then Johnny HT's cousin, Corby Day Likes Coffee, who did the announcer segment in the song. That was without those two, and then of course without Danny and Isaac really carrying the cutscene and doing the models and the subtitles and, you know, making it all work. You know, I think it was a really collaborative effort on making that segment happen. We just thought it would be so cool, you know, just to, like, have a musical number in the middle of an event, and clearly the players thought it was pretty awesome too. So yeah,
we were the first ones to do it, I believe.
We were, yeah, first ever musical segment. Other events want to do it, you know?
Unless you count.
Go ahead.
XX Roy singing in the middle of MCC, but subject to opinion, I guess. The next one then comes from Tussin. They are asking if they can see their family now, Danny. Specifically Danny.
Well, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, still got another 30 years in the contract, so. Sorry, man. Next question.
Well, that was actually the final question, fun enough. So,
well, guess you'll find out in 30 years.
The rest of the questions we've pretty much asked, so there's no point going over again. But yeah, that's it. Thank you all for joining me. I really, really appreciate it. Before I do the
outro, though,
I always like to give this opportunity for you all to promote yourselves. I will do individually, and then you guys can nominate who promotes Pandora's Box. So just in alphabetical order here. For anyone listening, where can people find you, Colorbolt?
To be honest, I'm really only on Twitter and active on Discord. I mean, I don't really use social media or make content anymore like I used to. I used to stream, like, Minecraft games and stuff all the time, but now the best way you can support me is just by playing on my servers and enjoying my games, really. Or our games, really. That's the best way you can support me.
Oh, there we go. And if you just send me any links to those or whatever, I can slap them in the description, if you remember.
Just my Twitter will be good.
Danny?
I'm on Twitter at Danny Picacho, DannyPicacho. I occasionally post there, like, once in a while, not really much. Also, Kelton mentioned my rookies video. I promise it'll come out one day. I know I haven't uploaded a YouTube video in probably, what, like, 2 years, I think. I've been working on it. It is fire. I'll release that eventually. It's going to be so good that Blockworks themselves will pay me for it, I'm sure. But yeah, besides that, Besides me, I always ask people to if you're interested in 5v5 class based games like Counter Push a try. It's such an amazing game, and once you really learn it and get into it, it's so fun and addicting.
Yeah, it's a complete public server too. So like, if you have
yeah, the you can IP, play anytime.
You probably like, should we plug the IP? Should we plug the IP?
Yeah, sure. It's probably better if you join the Discord so you know when people are playing.
Yeah. Join the Growing Studios Discord. That's probably
the link best in the description
where everyone's at. All the cool people are there.
Yeah.
Send me the link and I will put it in the description.
Yeah.
I know I'm in the Discord, but it's just easy if you give me the link.
Yeah, I got you.
And for anyone who's wondering what it looks like, if you go to the live tab on Inside MC, we've actually casted it. So if you genuinely want to see what some of the games are like, you can watch me and Jogana and then just me in the end yap over the games. There you go. So. And Resendor, I haven't forgot about you. Your turn.
Yeah, so you can find me on YouTube and Spotify and Apple Music under Kelton Stuckey. And then you can also find me on Twitter at Rizendor, and as well as on other platforms such as YouTube, you can find me under Rizendor as well. But that's more for just like my main content, not as much my musical content anymore.
There we go. They're the Hannah Montana of our age. Soon you'll see them singing beautiful songs.
The new Koji Kondo.
New Koji Kondo.
And
I can sing terribly.
And who's promoting Pandora's Box?
You.
Oh god, okay. Yeah, no, fair enough. Also, sorry if I've gotten quieter. My parents have gone to sleep and I have to be up at like 3 a.m. and it's currently 9:30.
No worries.
So context as to why I'm whispering now.
Yeah, all good.
If you want to check out Pandora's Box, or if you want to watch Pandora's Box, Dragon Pit, at least a replay, you can check out their Twitter at Pandora's Box.
MC.
I was getting to that. You just didn't let me finish, sadly. I was definitely
hello, sir.
You could also check out their YouTube channel, Colorbolt, because that's Pandora's Box. And join the Discord, Grunk Studios. There you go. Which will also be linked below. So you can find Grunk Studios for everything. Counter Push Contenders, Pandora's Box, the next project that they're working on that will be announced in January. So there you go. Was that a good promotion?
Yes.
I think that was amazing. Yeah, everyone stay groinking out there, okay? Okay, no, don't actually do that.
make sure to wake up and groink every morning.
Okay.
Hey, yo.
Because it's literally just the sound a goat makes in French. Like, that's it. According to French literature, the sound of a goat is groink with two dots on the I.
Yeah.
Stay groinking.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Stay groinking, guys.
All right. Stay groinking. Well, with that being said, that sadly brings the end of this amazing Inside MC. Thank you all for listening. Stay safe. Don't eat too much bread. Groink the day away. Pieces.
See ya.
See you.